She likes to move it, move it. She likes to move it, move it. Whether it's human movement or equine movement, Dr. Pam Robinson of Brandywine Farm has a keen eye for it, and her expertise might have produced this year's Kentucky Derby winner. Dr. Pam Robinson joins us next here on In the Gate.
They're in the gate.
They're in the gate.
In the gate.
They're in the gate.
It's a head-bobbing finish.
This is In the Gate, ESPN's Thoroughbred Racing Podcast. My name is Barry Abrams. You can follow me on Twitter at @BAbramsVoice or on Facebook at Barry Abrams Voice. You can also get us on our YouTube channel by searching In the Gate Podcast. You can get us on SoundCloud as well, which services the iTunes Store and TuneIn.com. You can get us on the Pink Podcatcher app. And now you can subscribe to In the Gate in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. For the full In the Gate experience, subscribe now in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. There's more than one way to approach any question, like, what should we eat for dinner? What kind of car to buy? How much did the Russians influence the election? Or, what bloodlines should I use to breed a racehorse? Breeders of horses come from all different backgrounds. Some, like Alex Solis II, have parents and possibly grandparents who spent their lives in the business. So knowledge of bloodlines comes from osmosis. Others, like the breeders of California Chrome, Perry Martin and Steve Coburn, come from complete non-racing backgrounds. Then there's Dr. Pam Robinson, who didn't necessarily come from a racing background, but isn't exactly a stranger to athletic performance. She is the retired director of the graduate program for sports medicine at the University of North Carolina, which just won the NCAA men's basketball championship, by the way. She ran the Interdisciplinary Human Movement Science Lab. Dr. Robinson also served on the U.S. Olympic Physiological Testing Committee. So she knows a thing or two about movement. But you might ask, what do her husband and she know about breeding successful horses? Well, there's this little race coming up called the Kentucky Derby. Maybe you've heard of it. And two of the potential starters this year come from Pam and Jim Robinson's Brandywine Farm.
But it will be Gunavera and Javier Castellano moving clear. Gunavera for local trainer Antonio Sano romps in the Fountain of Youth.
Royal Mo has bounded away, leads by two lengths, coming past the eighth pole with Sheer Flattery only plodding away in third. Royal Mo shows the way home. Royal Mo, too good. He's won it by three.
To quote Matt Damon in the movie Good Will Hunting, how do you like them apples? Now would you like to know how Dr. Pam Robinson connects human movement and thoroughbred movement? Good, because we welcome Dr. Robinson for the first time here to In the Gate. What kind of work did you direct in Chapel Hill?
Well, initially, academically, I directed the graduate program of sports medicine. And for those who don't know what that means, sports medicine involves the prevention and treatment of sports injuries. And my initial research was in the area of determining cardiac output and systolic time intervals in elite athletes. And if you were to apply that to more of a practical application, why it involved physiological profiles of elite swimmers. So when I was at UNC, we designed a system where we could collect and measure the volume of both intake and output gases and measure the concentration of both O2 and CO2, plus take periodic blood samples as the athletes were swimming, which that was, meant we had to have a track that followed them over the lanes of the swimming pool to collect those samples. And based upon the samples we collected, then we were able to calculate both the max speed idle 2, or more commonly known as aerobic capacity, and the anaerobic threshold while swimming. And then that work enabled me or provided me a position on the U.S. Olympic Physiological Testing Committee. So that's one of the main areas of research, although there were many areas that I was involved in as director of our lab for those 25 years.
Well, it sounds like that work went far beyond the school. It sounds like this is something that would benefit the sports community at large. I don't know how far reaching you went.
Well, definitely. We were actually under contract with the military to do some physiological testing at a military base of all of their school-age children, which was almost 1,500 young children. so that they could design and help implement their physical fitness program on their military base. Well, I did some testing for the North Carolina State Highway Patrol and helped them design their physical fitness battery that they used for their patrolmen, not only in admittance to, but also maintaining their a certain minimum level of physical fitness.
How much advancement would you say you made in things like identifying an athlete's strengths and weaknesses and analyzing performance and maximizing the effectiveness of training?
Well, I hope that we made a difference. We did become one of four regional testing centers for elite swimmers in this country, and that was based on some of the preliminary work that we did. So obviously we must have been making some contribution, and there's probably, you know, other areas in which I'm sure hopefully we made contribution. And then again, we were also an academic university too. So, you know, the number of graduate students who would have gone through our program and gone out to contribute to the, you know, to the public would be enormous too. UNC was noted for having probably the best sports medicine program in the country at the time. I assume that they're maintaining that rank. But, you know, I've been away for about almost 20 years now.
Well, that's a perfect segue. What made you want to switch from human performance to equine performance, so to speak?
Well, I guess we needed to make a decision. I had 25 years, wasn't really ready to retire. I think I was probably at the top of the height of my career. But my husband had retired, and we had 100 broodmares in North Carolina. And stood 5 stallions. But, you know, if you're in the thoroughbred breeding business, the place to be is in Kentucky. So we made a decision earlier than what I was planning, but and I don't regret it, but the first couple of years I used to wake up and still have a tear coming down my cheek. I wasn't at the university. But, you know, as I say, it was a crossroads where the time had come that we really need to be in Kentucky.
Let's get to Guanavara. Take us through the story of his foaling in late February of 2014.
Well, it was what appeared to be a normal foaling. He's a big, strong colt. The mare, shortly afterwards, was showing signs of hemorrhaging or bleeding. And she had a uterine vessel that would have probably been stretched during the foaling process. She was 19 years of age, so the vessel walls were, you know, not as viable as in a younger mare. And one of those vessels proceeded to rupture. Obviously, it was not a large vessel, because if it were a large uterine artery, why, she would have died immediately. We were able to stabilize her with appropriate drugs and therapy, fluid therapy. And after 3 days, I would say that she was, you know, totally back to normal. All of her blood values indicated so. And another week later, after being turned out with her foal in a small paddock for another good 7 days, going in and out every day, everything appeared perfectly normal. And all of a sudden, out in her paddock, she drops dead of what would have been a heart attack or an aneurysm. But it was a very fast, all of a sudden type of thing. And therefore, that leaves us with a foal that needs to eat every hour, on the hour, round the clock, which is very labor intensive. And that is the reason for nurse mares. Nurse mares can substitute for that mare. And I might say that their foals, our nurse mare man takes very good care of the foals of his nurse mares. He raises them to sell, so he doesn't want anything to happen to his foals. So we never get a nurse mare until the foal is old enough that it can be bottle fed or, you know, go on a bucket of foalac pellets and be supported. And then it'll substitute to take the place of our mare.
How did Guanavara react to another mare taking care of him? Did you notice anything unusual?
Well, this is probably terrible to say, but in a young foal, the most important thing on their mind is their milk source. So mares are bonded to the foals pretty strongly. But the foals, initially, what they're interested in is something to eat. So it was a very easy introduction in terms of all we had to do was put the nurse mare in a stall. The foal is in the same stall. And what would you say? Point him in the right direction, and he latches onto the mare and is nursing. So it was an extremely simple process.
We will have a full recap and reset of the Kentucky Derby picture in just a few moments. We're chatting with Dr. Pam Robinson of Brandywine Farm here on In the Gate. You've owned that operation for nearly two decades, mainly with the intent of breeding and selling. So how do you feel when you send the little ones off to their new homes?
Well, we have raised, actually we've been in the business for 42 years, I think. Very seldom do I shed a tear anymore. And in fact, by the time you've worked with yearling colts every day, sales prepping, and they're getting big and strong and want to chew on you, etc., sometimes you're kind of glad to see them go on to their next task and let somebody else break them and take them to the races. But every once in a while, there is a special one. And when you have an orphan foal like Gunavera, he had a tendency to get more attention. He was a kind foal to begin with, loved attention. So he was kind of like a big puppy dog. And everybody just, you know, constantly would go to pet him and hug him and etc.
Now, Gunavara is from the second crop of the stallion Dialed In. I know, or at least I believe, you bought two breedings to him. As an expert in performance, what made you choose Dialed In as a sire?
Okay, well, actually, we're doing two lifetime breeding rights in him. And he was a big, good-looking, correct horse. Confirmation-wise, I thought that he had multiple ways of going with our mares. And so it made sense to give him a shot. And Darby Dan has always been very good in standing good stallions over the years. So it just, it just all kind of fell together.
Royal Mo also comes from an extremely hot sire, the 2010 Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, Uncle Mo. Now, we curmudgeons in the media, that's what we are, we were saying last year regarding Uncle Mo's son, Nyquist, maybe you've heard of Nyquist, that Uncle Mo never won a race beyond a mile and a 16th, and in the Breeders' Cup Classic at a mile and a quarter, he bombed. He finished 10th. So what kind of horse were you thinking you had bred when Royal Mo arrived?
Well, Royal Irish Lass is a big, good-looking mare. I mean, she is the epitome of what you want in a broodmare. She, being such a big, good-looking mare, and Uncle Mo is a big, good-looking, stout horse, I just thought that we would get something pretty special. And Royal Mo is almost, he's growing so gosh darn fast that he, I'm surprised that John Sheriff's, he doesn't usually run horses as early as he did with Royal Mo, but the horse is showing so much promise that I think he needs to give him a shot.
What would it mean to you if one of your horses won the Kentucky Derby?
Well, financially, it would mean more to us if Royal Mo won, because we have the dam. We have a Malibu Moon yearling, and of course, soon to have an Honor Code foal. As far as Gunavera winning, financially, what is, I think it's capped at $7,500 maybe, Breeders Incentive Awards. It's not a whole lot of money in the pocket. But the calls and thank yous from all of our friends throughout the country would mean probably more than the money.
We certainly wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for a few minutes.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here on In the Gate, but when we come back, Art Wilson of the Los Angeles Daily News will help try to make some sense of this really muddled Kentucky Derby picture. Don't go away. Welcome back to In the Gate. We had three Kentucky Derby preps, probably three of the biggest Kentucky Derby preps recently, and they were supposed to clear up the Derby picture. I think they did just the opposite, and so does our next guest, and that is Art Wilson of the Southern California News Group, who's newspapers include the LA Daily News and the Orange County Register. So anywhere in Southern California, if you pick up a paper, you're probably going to see his work. And it's a pleasure for the first time to welcome Art Wilson here to In the Gate. Now, you were at the Santa Anita Derby, which early returns are, this is not your father's California. We didn't see a California Chrome, an American Pharoah, or even I'll Have Another, the horses who have won the Kentucky Derby from California in recent years. What was your take on Gormley and the Santa Anita Derby?
Well, you know, Barry Gormley has been kind of a Jekyll and Hyde horse. He looked so good in winning the first two starts of his career, his maiden, and then comes back and wins the front runner stakes at Santa Anita. And then he threw in a clunker in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, comes back and starts his three-year-old campaign with a win in the Sham Stakes over American Anthem, and then throws in kind of another disappointing effort in the San Felipe, and then now, you know, comes back and wins the Santa Anita Derby. So it's almost like hit and miss with him. You don't know what you're going to get. But it's interesting, Barry, because John Sheriff said before the race that he wanted to try some different tactics with Gormley and come from further off the pace than he had been coming. And early on, he was fifth at one point in the race and then closed to, of course, win. And looks like he's back in good form again.
Gormley is being presented three wide within a length of them, swinging for home and then Midnight Pleasure. Less than 3/16 to go. Battle of Midway from Royal Mo, and here comes Gormley, followed by Iliad and Reach the World. It's Battle of Midway trying to stave off the Moss pair. Royal Mo and Gormley battling strongly. Gormley looming into the lead now. Gormley takes the lead, and Gormley wins the Santa Anita Derby, a half length of Battle of Midway, Royal Mo.
Now, the time was really slow. I mean, 1:51 and change for a mile and an eighth. And give us an idea of where that fit in relation to the other races that day. Was that just a slow track, or was it just a slow race?
I think it was a slow race. That was the slowest Santa Anita Derby since 1957, when a horse named Sir William won the Santa Anita Derby. And it's the fifth slowest of all time, Santa Anita Derby winning times. They came home the final eighth in 13 and change, which is, they staggered home. And with the early pace, you had a pretty fast pace in that race. And the closers should have been coming a little bit faster, but nobody came from farther back than fifth. So I think it was more product of the field than the actual time.
Long shot, IRAP has the lead. McCracken is still fourth. Taprid is fifth on his outside. Let's see what they can do. They've got to catch Long Shot. IRAP at the top of the stretch. Who leads it by two lengths? Practical Joke second. McCracken third. Taprid fourth on the outside. J-Boy's Echo in fifth. Here's McCracken storming up on the outside. IRAP is fighting on, and Practical Joke is in between those two. Final furlong of the Toyota Bluegrass. IRAP with the lead. Practical Joke giving all he's got. IRAP 31-1 wins the Toyota Bluegrass with Julian Leperoux aboard.
Now, you were at Santa Anita, but you were able to see the other prep races that happened. And, of course, the one that had everybody's attention was the Bluegrass, with the horse that had been number one all along in the weekly NTRA poll, McCracken, who finished third behind the 31-1 long shot IRAP. Are you of the mindset that McCracken needed the race and is going to be much better positioned for Churchill Downs, or did we see a chink in the armor?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Barry. You know, I mean, you had a horse, IRAP, who has run second to a couple of nice horses, Mastery in the Los Al Derby last year, and then Royal Mo in the Bob Lewis at Santa Anita earlier this year. Broke his maiden in the Bluegrass and came from, I think he was tracking from second most of the way, and then just drew off, and, well, I wouldn't say drew off, but McCracken, I expected more, to be honest with you. He hadn't raced since, winning the Sam F. Davis because of the minor ankle strain that he had, but I expected more. Now, he could bounce back and run an improved effort in the Derby, but I was kind of disappointed in McCracken's race.
Well, Ian Wilkes, his trainer, said the morning after the Bluegrass that the horse was tired, and he was happy the horse was tired. He said if he wasn't tired, I'd be in trouble. So hopefully McCracken got something out of that and it'll be better positioned for the Kentucky Derby, where I think he's the best horse by far. I don't really even think it's all that close. But that brings us to our third race.
Irish War Cry sidles up alongside of Battalion Runner midway on the far turn, and Irish War Cry pokes ahead in front. Irish War Cry on the outside's got a neck in front. Battalion Runner all out, second on the inside, four lengths back to Cloud Computing. Irish War Cry's in front because they come to the final 16th. Battalion Runner's not going with him. Then comes Cloud Computing down to the line. Irish War Cry has won the Wood Memorial under Rajiv Mirage.
Irish War Cry basically had the same story as Gormley. Could he sit off the pace and make a run? And in the Wood Memorial, he did. And I think any horse trained by Graham Motion, you have to take seriously. He is such a respected horseman. What did you think of the Wood?
Yeah, I was impressed with the Irish War Cry's race. Like you said, they wanted to keep him off the pace, kind of like what they wanted to do with Gormley. It worked out for both of them. And I thought, of the three races yesterday, I thought he was the most impressive winner. I really liked his race. And Battalion Runner, such a lightly raced colt, he could improve off his second-place effort in that race. Cloud Computing got off a tad slow in the Wood, and I don't think that really made much of a difference, so I don't think he was going to challenge any more than he did. But Irish War Cry definitely got my attention by being able to stalk and, you know, tactical early speed and then close in the stretch and win. That's the kind of horse I like in the Derby.
Want to make a quick reference to the Kentucky Oaks as well. We never give enough attention to the Kentucky Oaks, and you were there in Santa Anita to see Paradise Woods with a devastating win in the Santa Anita Oaks. We don't have Unique Bella, who was the favorite going in. Where do you think Paradise Woods fits in relation to the other horses that could contest the Kentucky Oaks?
Well, if that was the real thing, what we saw in the Santa Anita Oaks, she's going to be a major player in Kentucky. Richard Mandela, it's kind of funny because after the race, Richard Mandela, her trainer, didn't commit to the Oaks because he wasn't sure he wanted to run her in the Santa Anita Oaks because of Unique Bella. But then when Unique Bella was injured and couldn't run, then he gave it a go. And so he says, well, you know, let's see how she comes out of it. I don't know if he's completely comfortable with her racing experience, that she's ready for a ship to Kentucky and running the Kentucky Oaks. And after the way she ran in the Santa Anita Oaks, I think she'll be in Kentucky for sure, and she'll be a major player.
Art Wilson of the Southern California News Group is with us here on In the Gate. We only have one real major Kentucky Derby prep race left to run, and that's Arkansas. But there is a major player there in Classic Empire, the two-year-old champion, who missed some training, partly due to his quirkiness and partly due to some back trouble. Even if he wins that race, he won't have had quite the amount of seasoning, I think, that you want to see from a Kentucky Derby contender. If he wins, what chance do you give him in the big race?
Well, you know, even though he hasn't won a race yet this year after his Breeders' Cup Juvenile win, I've had him in my top fives all year because I just, even though he debuted in with a third-place effort, he showed so much talent in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile that I couldn't take him off my top five. To me, if he wins the Arkansas Derby, he's a major player in Kentucky, no question in my mind, because he's one of the talented. This year, Barry, it's hard for me to throw anybody out that's shown any kind of talent at all along the road to the Kentucky Derby because it's just so wide open. I think a horse like Practical Joke, who just can't win, but he's always right there, Derby Day could be his day. So any horse that's got talent, I'm going to look at.
And I know Always Dreaming obviously will be a major player for Todd Pletcher, having won the Florida Derby, but I'm not really off the Gunavara bandwagon, who finished third in the Florida Derby. So, yeah, I mean, this is still pretty much wide open. Art Wilson of the Southern California News Group, thank you so much for a few minutes.
You bet. It's been a pleasure, Barry.
Our thanks to Art Wilson and to Dr. Pam Robinson.
I've seen so many executives who've climbed the corporate ladder. You can't do that without intelligence. But many have a weakness, and it's almost always the same. They know their business, but lack good common sense. In the afterglow of the inaugural running of the Pegasus World Cup, the Strana Group says it will raise the purse from $12 million to $16 million for next January's event. The extra cash Stronach will reimburse. Of course, he's doing this to top the Maktoums of Dubai, who said they'll likely raise their World Cup prize. You know this isn't about the races themselves, it's about the promoters, whose can-you-top-this egos are supersized. The Stronachs have to know they can't compete with oil money. They might price themselves right down into an abyss. Because what is the weakness so many executives carry habitually? It's overconfidence, arrogance, hubris. You can get us on our YouTube channel by searching In the Gate Podcast. You can get us on SoundCloud as well, which services the iTunes Store, TuneIn.com. You can get us on the iPhone Podcatcher app. And now you can subscribe to In the Gate in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. For the full In the Gate experience, subscribe now in the Listen tab of the ESPN app. And you can follow me on Twitter at BAbramsVoice or on Facebook at Barry Abrams Voice. That's In the Gate for this week. I'm Barry Abrams. We'll see you next time.